This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to five young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thank you so much for joining us. Last week, I did a program outlining some of my concerns about a matter that has become quite controversial in evangelical discussions recently. And I'm talking about an interreligious dialogue that took place a few months back between apologist Dr. James White, who is director of Alpha and Omega Ministries, and Dr. Yasser Qadhi, dean of academic affairs at Al-Maghrib Institute and resident scholar of the Memphis Islamic Center. Now, Dr. Yasser Qadhi has a history of radical ties, radical associations, and a track record of espousing a radical form of Islamic supremacism, an ideology that is a very great threat not only to Christians, but to our entire way of life. Now, today I'm going to go over again some of my concerns about this gathering and some of the content in this gathering. And Dr. White has accepted my invitation to come on this broadcast today and answer some questions and respond, and we're glad he's agreed to do that. Right up front, though, I'm going to set down some ground rules that I'm going to stick by during this interview. First of all, we're not going to talk about any other people who have weighed in on this, good or bad. This discussion is not about ad hominem rabbit trails. It's not about personalities. It's not about who your favorite celebrity is. The discussion will be about the dialogue and the ramifications. The only exception to this ground rule, and I have conveyed this to Dr. White's staff, is if Dr. White wants to talk about something I said or something Jim Simpson said on the last show, he can do so when we get to that part. I think that's only fair. Now, also, because I have very limited time, we're going to be very quick about our discussion. We're going to keep the discussion moving, and I'm not going to filibuster, and I know Dr. White is not going to filibuster, so if I do end up interrupting him or if he interrupts me, it's just to keep the discussion going. So I don't want anybody to think we're trying to be rude or anything like that. I outlined on the last show three main concerns that I have. And we're going to take one concern a segment, and then we're going to do some follow-up on other matters. So with that, Dr. White, welcome.
It's good to be with you.
Thanks for being with us. Okay, first question, very direct question. Is there any biblical model or biblical command for interreligious dialogue, not a debate where you have propositions and you have the opportunity really to make corrections and rebuttals, but interreligious dialogue with proponents of false religions in front of any assembled group of God's people, whether it's mixed or not?
Well, there are a number of problems with that question. It wasn't a gathering of God's people. It was a ticketed event. There were both Christians and Muslims there. It was not a service of the church or anything like that. So everybody who came wanted to hear a discussion between a Muslim and a Christian about what they agree on and what they disagree on. There was no question about that. Secondly, yes, there is. The Apostle Paul, it was his regular activity to go not only into synagogues but into the marketplace. And there, according to Acts 17:7, go in the marketplace every day with those who happen to be there, which would mean all sorts of people, Stoics, Epicureans, people of all sorts of different religious faiths. Wouldn't have been any Muslims there. That would be an anachronistic thing, obviously. But he engaged in reasoning and dialogue with those individuals there in the context of the marketplace, the synagogue. When he was kicked out of the synagogue in Ephesus, he went to another place. So yes, there has to be, if the things that Paul did in dialoguing and in seeking to persuade people, there has to be give and take. There has to be an understanding of what both sides are saying. There is a time for direct proclamation, as Paul did. There is a time for interaction and persuading, as he did. And we have to be free to follow the Spirit's leading as to which is which.
Okay, so let me respond back to a couple of things that you said. I said in the question, is it biblical, is there a biblical command or a biblical model for interreligious dialogue in front of any assembled group of God's people, mixed or not? And I added that on purpose because it was a mixed group. So I was not wrong in saying that. Second of all, When you talk about Paul, Paul did dialogue, and I'm not talking about the kind of dialogue where you get together with someone from a false religion and you go back and forth. We're supposed to do that. We're supposed to share the gospel with people of all types. We can listen to them. That's part of forming friendships and being able to build up a bridge there where you can talk to one another. That's what we're commanded to do. What I'm talking about is a public, formal interreligious dialogue where you're watching two people, one a Christian and one somebody, a proponent of a false religion, in front of Christians. And there is no correction on the false religion. Is there any biblical command to do that that you see in Scripture?
Well, of course, the correction is provided in the actual dialogue itself. Anyone who watched the dialogues saw I was given free rein to explain the gospel, but it was not a debate. Dr. Cotty says he is not an expert in Christianity, and therefore he did not want to debate because I would have the advantage in that situation. But unfortunately, Janet, what my critics have not asked about is what the results of this have been. Because you see, the desire in this situation was to move the debate and the discussion from just two people up front to everybody in the audience. And that's exactly what took place. I have done nearly 160 moderated public debates around the world, many with Muslims. And I can tell you that after those debates, generally what happens is you have the Christians over on one side talking about what their side said, and the Muslims over on the other side talking about what their side said.
Okay, like I said, I'm not trying to interrupt. I'm just trying to stay on topic here. When you talk about correction was provided within the dialogue, mm-hmm. I do say that you did at various times say what Christians believe, and you would, I'm talking about the first night, the one in the church, you would say what Christians would say this, Christians would say that, that sort of thing.
Right.
But there were a number of times that Dr. Cotty said things that were false, and you did not correct him.
Not because it was not a debate. It
right.
was a discussion.
It was not a debate. So when you talk about the 160 some debates that you've done before, we're not speaking
right.
about a debate. We're talking about an interreligious dialogue in which there is not an active correction when the proponent of the false religion is misleading people. And it's said up front that, you know, this is his position. It's not the Christian position. You were clear about that. But I don't see any biblical model or command, and I don't think that you have given me one, on when the saints are ever to do an interreligious dialogue rather than a biblical proclamation and dialoguing for the purpose of evangelizing somebody.
Well, of course, if that was all I had ever done, and that was to be isolated from all the debate, but nobody there believed that. None of the Muslims there believed that. They didn't isolate Yasser Qadhi's statements from everything Yasser Qadhi had taught. None of the Christians isolated what I was teaching from what I had taught. So I find it very strange that, well, we just need to look at just this one thing and not take the entirety into context.
Well, because but the problem,
as I was trying
right.
to explain, if I get a chance to explain, and if you'd let me do that.
I'm just moving it along.
What we're trying to do and what we did was what happened after these dialogues is the interaction took place afterwards between the entire audience.
But why was an interreligious dialogue the necessary format for that? Is that the only means by which Christians and Muslims can talk to one another? Because I know a lot of ministries and churches and pastors where people do talk to Muslims about the gospel.
It's one of many ways, but this was a unique way that could allow it to happen for many, many people rather than just on a single person at a time. So in other words, because we showed respect for one another in how we address these issues, the result was that Christians and Muslims in the audience were able to get together and not only that evening have conversations, but it resulted in further communication after that, which is generally not what happens in the context of a debate. And so no one has asked me about the young Muslim lady that came up to me after the mosque discussion and thanked me for coming and then said, could I please ask you a question? And I'm like, yes, certainly. And she says, how do you handle the impact of pagan religion on the development of the doctrine of the Trinity at the Council of Nicaea? Now, I'll be perfectly honest with you. The majority of the critics who have come after me would not even know how to answer that question.
Well, that's kind of immaterial. That's kind of immaterial. And you don't know.
No, it's not.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
It's not immaterial. Okay, I think it's very material.
That's ad hominem. That's what it's ad hominem. Yeah, it's ad hominem to say that, because whether or not somebody else could have answered that question is irrelevant to the point you're trying to make.
No, it's not. It's not irrelevant at all, because you see, she understood. She was willing to ask that question of someone because I had gained the opportunity to actually address an important issue. And for 10 minutes, I stood there and shared with her Ignatius's testimony to the deity of Christ, what Constantine actually did and did not do at the Council of Nicaea. I gave her references that she could look up. That would not happen in any other context than what happened that evening.
Okay, there's your answer. We're going to go to a very quick break on Janet Mefford Today. We'll be back with Dr. James White. Stay with us.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
Leaders, prayer warriors, conservative women of all walks of life, it's time for us to stand up and be heard. That's why I wrote Feisty and Feminine, a rallying cry for conservative women. I want to encourage you to find your voice and join the millions of women who, like you, want to honor God and serve our neighbors in an honest, compassionate, fearless way. For too long, we've been dismissed as old-fashioned, humorless prudes by a malicious faction that presents a caricature of who we are and what we represent. It's time we defeat the lies and present the truth to a world that is in desperate need of the thoughtful, caring voices of women.
Penny Nance's latest book, Feisty and Feminine, empowers Christian women to engage the culture, and it's our gift to thank you for your donation today. Request yours at CapitolHillBrief.org. That's CapitolHillBrief.org.
Do you want to experience a closer relationship with God today? Sometimes growing in intimacy with God can seem out of our reach or something we have to work hard to achieve. Well, the good news is God desires intimacy with you more than you could ever imagine. This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. If you want to grow closer to God, you simply need to think what He thinks and feel what He feels about everything, starting with yourself. It's impossible to experience intimacy with God when you're down on yourself, beating yourself up for not being perfect, or just plain thinking negatively about yourself, because that's not how He sees you. God is for you. He delights in you. You're beautiful to Him even in your weakness. See yourself as God sees you, and you'll grow closer to Him today. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com. That's JeanneNNIGRO.com. That's jeannienigro.com.
Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. We're glad you're here. We're talking with Dr. James White from Alpha and Omega Ministries. I had done a show last week, as you may have heard, discussing this matter about the dialogue, the interreligious dialogue that had taken place a few months back in the Memphis area with a Memphis scholar, a Muslim scholar named Dr. Yasser Qadhi. Now, I want to move to one of the concerns that I have, the second question that I have about Dr. Qadhi himself. And before we dive into this, I'm just going to take a short time to play a couple of very quick clips, because I think this is important to add some context to the discussion. First, I want to play a very short clip here of Dr. Qadhi and Dr. White. The context here is Dr. White and Dr. Qadhi were talking about why it was that a Christian and a Muslim can sit down and have a good rapport at an event like this. This is cut one.
So if we can get along and have a fruitful dialogue and conversation and show that, you know, it's okay to disagree, even if we disagree passionately, I don't have to hate him. I don't have to feel fear against him. I can wish for guidance for him, and he can wish for guidance for me. One side of me can feel a sadness or a remorse that he's not fully there yet, but I can still break bread with him, like we did today for lunch. We had a great lunch together.
He likes really spicy Mexican, by the way, just so you know.
Ethnically, I'm Indian. I can't help liking spices, so it's like... We can break bread together. We can crack jokes together. We can watch Monty Python together.
Okay, very nice, very congenial, kind of funny, cute moment, nice moment there. Now I want to play for you another cut in another context of Dr. Yasser Qadhi. This is cut two.
Fight those who disbelieve in Allah. And by the way, this shows you that jihad is an obligation upon the Muslims whenever there is a khalifa or an emir. Okay, jihad is an obligation whenever there's a khalifa and an emir, and the Muslim army or Muslim state is capable of doing jihad. Because the general ruling is that the Muslims will always be at physical war with the non-Muslims. Okay, The general ruling is that the Muslims will always have a physical jihad with the non-Muslims unless the situation is weak, or like we are in our times, we don't have a Khalifa or Islamic State. Otherwise, jihad is going to last until the Day of Judgment, like the Prophet said. Okay, so this is the reputation of those modernist groups that try to downplay jihad. No, we fight literally with our swords and our guns, if you like, in our times. We fight the non-Muslims when we have the capability of doing so. When we don't, have this capability, then temporarily, not a permanent thing, temporarily, we do not do jihad until that time comes back. So we fight those who disbelieve in Allah.
All right, Dr. White, what is your reaction to the contrast between those two Dr. Qadis? Because one is very nice and funny and personable. The next one sounds very scary.
Actually, obviously, I had listened to Dr. Qadi's lectures for years before we ever got together. So as I said at the beginning of the first night, Dr. Qadi is a believing conservative Muslim. I never identified him as a moderate or anything like that. He holds to the specific jurisprudence of the Islamic faith, and that's what he was talking about there in a much older recording, but I would imagine he would hold to the exact same position today. However, given that he has signed the letter against ISIS, he might modify a couple of those things, but the important thing is, he says, unless you have a khalifa, there can be no jihad. If you have a caliph, then there will be. That's the Dar al-Harb, the Dar al-Islam. Absolutely orthodox Islamic teaching. And believe it or not, I think the gospel's for those people too.
I do too.
I do too.
Yeah. That's not in question. My problem is, as you've acknowledged, he's not just a conservative Muslim. The correct term for him is an Islamist. He is somebody who wants the Sharia and is biding his time, because this is how that wing of Islam behaves. You have different goals, you have different tactics that are used by groups like the Muslim Brotherhood versus Al-Qaeda or ISIS. The end goal is the same, but the tactics are different. My question to you is, why did you invite an Islamist who has said myriad radical things like this, when we know how Sharia and Islamic supremacism plays out for Christians and churches across the world? They are persecuted, they are killed. It's true.
That's not radical Islam. That's just normal Islam.
Okay, isn't that a problem, though? Isn't that a problem?
That's why we need to witness to these people and talk to them about what Jesus Christ has accomplished.
Right.
That's exactly what missionaries are doing in other lands. That's exactly how they reach these people in those lands.
Why not talk about the radical statements that he has made? I'm not going to take away word radical.
I have many times.
I'm not finished. Wait a second, Dr. White. I'm not trying to interrupt you, but let me finish my question. Why didn't you take some of the radical remarks he's made about Christians being filthy and not being able to have property, and we're going to take up guns and knives against them, and we're going to kill homosexuals when we finally get the Islamic State? Why not talk about that in front of the people of God to expose Islam? Or better yet, bring a former Muslim who could be there, who could tell you exactly the same things about the theology, but would also be able to put a repudiation on it that would explain in context to people what the danger of this is to the church and to Western civilization.
Okay, as long as you demand that every time I've played Dr. Qadi and dealt with these things in the past, as long as you demand to isolate this from everything else both he and I have said, then it's not something that can be understandable. But I didn't do that. He didn't do that. No one in the audience did that. And that's the only way to turn it into something that was never intended to be. You wanted it to be a debate. That's what you're saying. Why didn't you bring somebody else in? Why didn't you raise these issues? The issues that we wanted to raise and discuss were the first and fundamental things that we need to discuss.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I mean is, if you really wanted Christians, here's what you're saying. If you really wanted Christians, let's say, for example, your stated goal of this dialogue, the first night, as you said, I want us to be able to not fear Muslims. I want us to be able to build bridges and come together in community and talk to one another. Fine. Why not bring in somebody who's not trying to impose the Sharia and has all these radical ties to groups like the Muslim Brotherhood and works for the Al Maghrib Institute, which has terror links, and all the rest? If you knew that, why him? Why not somebody else who didn't have all those radical ties?
Again, that's not radical. He is
okay, but problematic. Problematic, right? Can't we agree on that?
No, Janet, I believe the gospel is for all Muslims.
Okay.
And he actually represents historical Orthodox Islam.
There's no one else.
Doesn't hold. Janet, I chose him because he is clear in his explications. He's not trying to put on airs, and he hasn't been totally westernized. If this represents the Islam that Christians in other lands are facing, why would I choose an Islam that doesn't represent what they are facing? Why would I have a dialogue with someone that doesn't represent the Muslims that that we're supposed to be talking to in other lands as well?
It depends on what your goal is. The fact that
my goal is to accurately represent Islam, and I believe Yasser Qadhi is a person that accurately represents Islam.
If you were going to be fair, though, to represent Yasser Qadhi's version of Islam, then you had a duty to tell the Christians who were present that this is Islamism, this is the Muslim Brotherhood form, this is Salafism. Let me tell you about the nature and danger to the church and Christians if his form of Sharia is imposed through stealth jihad, which was the stated goal of the Muslim Brotherhood and has been fully explained to us by any number of Islamic experts over the years. Okay. Why not say that?
Because I do not approach this from a political perspective. I approach it from a gospel perspective.
That's not political.
That's not political. Do I get a response, Janet?
It's not political.
Janet, do I get a response?
Of course, but I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to say that, so I'm interjecting.
Well, you are interjecting, and I disagree. It is political. He denies being a part of the Muslim Brotherhood. The issue that we were addressing is the nature of what he believes about God, what I believe about God, what he believes about salvation. I've addressed those other issues in other contexts. I am not under any obligation to repeat everything in every context, just as you are not.
One would have been nice. One line, one reference to it might have been nice.
Don't you think that the people coming there from their side already know what he teaches?
What about the Christians?
Well, that's the whole point.
Did they know he was like that?
Do you really think that Christians are so naive that they're just going to sit back and go, oh, well, I won't do any more reading or research on this. I'll just simply go with whatever he says.
Yes.
I don't expect the Muslims to do that.
Yes, I think some Christians would. Yes.
I don't believe that Christ's sheep are that way. No,
Some are. Otherwise, why are there teachers and why are there ministries and why are there those of us who are trying to bring truth to the people of God if we already assume
Is the truth who God is and what God did in Jesus Christ, or is the truth about accusations about the Muslim Brotherhood? Which is more priority? Which has the greater priority to the other?
They are both important in different ways. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you a question. What do you know about the Al-Maghrib Institute?
Well, by the way, I there's one other thing since you mentioned the Al-Maghrib Institute. You do realize that Yasser Qadhi no longer identifies himself as Salafi, right?
Okay, fine, but it's a Salafi religious training organization, and he works for it.
Were you aware of that?
That's okay, fine. No, I mean, I didn't know that offhand. Did he just repudiate? Fine, but he still works there. He still works there, right?
Hold on a second, Janet, please.
We're going to run out of time. I got 1 minute left. Can you answer the question? What do you know about the Al-Maghrib Institute and what it teaches there? I'm sorry, Dr. White, I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just going to run out of time.
It is standard Islamic teaching, and I believe that the best response to standard Islamic teaching is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that is why we did the dialogue, and that's why I will do it again if I have the opportunity to bring the only force to bear against that belief that the church has been given, which is not political unity or anything else. It is changed hearts and minds to introducing these people to who Jesus Christ truly is, because the reality is they don't know, because the Christians are not talking to them in a way that they can understand. That's what we did.
I think that there are a couple of responses to that. One is, I would not assume that every Christian is not talking to Muslims and that this is the only opportunity to bring Christians into a concern for the souls of Muslims. It is about presenting the gospel to Muslims, absolutely. But one terrorism expert described Al-Maghrib as Jihad U, well known for its Wahhabi-influenced extremism, rabid anti-Semitism, Holocaust denials, and militaristic preaching of jihad. You're saying, no problem, bring him in, let's present him before the people of God and not really refer to any of that. I disagree that the Christians who listened all ran home to do research on Dr. Qadhi. That's why I'm doing this show. But we're going to come back, Dr. White and I, on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to five young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. My guest, Dr. James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries, and we've been having a back and forth here about his dialogue, interreligious dialogue held a few months ago with Dr. Yasser Qadhi. He's been called an extreme preacher. He at one time was on a terrorist watch list. He also was investigated overseas for some of the remarks he made about killing homosexuals. All of this you can look up online and you can read, and I hope that you do. We don't have enough time to get into all of these things. One of the things that I want to get to in this segment, and I really do apologize, Dr. White, I'm not trying to be impolite by having to interject a little bit. I'm just trying to, like I said, we just have so little time. I have commercials. Like you said, I have commercials on my show, so I have to break. Do you believe that there is any danger to the church from Islamic supremacism? Specifically, do you believe that there is any threat from the Muslim Brotherhood to Christians in the United States?
In the United States, as in killing us or in what?
Any threat.
What do you mean by danger?
Any threat.
Any threat.
Of all, any at all.
Obviously, liberals, people who don't have a firm grasp of the gospel, can be caused to no longer speak the truth to Muslims or accept some type of compromise position. But to the true Church of Jesus Christ, no. If you mean something like bombings or something like that, certainly you would have that in any type of situation where someone believes that without a caliph pronouncing jihad, that they can go ahead and do that kind of thing. That's happening all around the world.
Okay, go ahead.
But the persecuted church all around the world wishes that they could have the opportunity that we had to do what we did. Because, see, I contacted an individual who is very much from the Middle East. He's involved in nations that are Muslim majority only. Uh-huh. And I asked him, I said, hey, did you watch it? Yes, I watched it. Yep. What did you think from outside the U.S.? And his response was, we could only wish to have that kind of opportunity. Okay. It was awesome. It was encouraging.
Great. Yeah, that's great. I am limited time here. That's the only reason I'm saying this. Let me read to you something. Are you familiar with the explanatory memorandum that the FBI came across in 1991?
In regards to the Muslim Brotherhood?
Correct.
Yes.
Do you know what it said?
In regards to the stealth jihad and in regards to bringing the United States down from the inside?
Yes. And
I've also read the Al-Qaeda handbook and everything else.
Okay.
But what is the response to that, Janet?
Okay.
The response to that is to change hearts and minds.
Dr. White, let me say first of all about the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm going to go through very quickly here and read you a section here from Andrew McCarthy, who was the former federal prosecutor. He now writes for National Review. He has written The Grand Jihad. I recommend everybody read that. And he said this: Islamic supremacists mean us grave harm. We are understandably preoccupied with the fact that violent jihadists are taking aim at our lives, but we should not let the immediacy and horror of that threat obscure the fact that the Islamist movement is taking aim at our way of life, and the movement's intellectual leader is the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, why is this significant when we're talking about this? I have a whole list here, Dr. White, of all of the ties that Qadhi has to the Muslim Brotherhood, along with those clips that you heard on the previous show and one clip that I was able to play today. He appeared at the ISNA gathering in July. He was at the Islamic Society of Boston, where the Tsarnaev brothers were radicalized, in June. He was at the three-day conference held by the Islamic Circle of North America and the Muslim American Society in April, where the head of CARE also spoke. CARE is the unindicted co-conspirator in the Hamas funding trial. Qadhi has appeared on a couple of occasions with Linda Sarsour. People will know who that is. They were featured speakers in April at the Islamic Society of North America's Striving for Justice conference, and on and on and on. When you have a terrorist expert like Andy McCarthy, who personally prosecuted the blind sheikh who was the mastermind of the 1993 World Trade Center bombings, should we not heed the warning to Andy McCarthy, partner that with what's going on overseas to Christians and the Christian church at the hands of Islamic supremacists, and take heed and not make it only about they need the gospel, but also be careful knowing what we know their goals are and how we handle them. You're trying to make this.
Wait,
One more thing. You're trying to make this only about the gospel and theology. You know I'm 100% with you on that. I have complete confidence in the power of the gospel. What I am saying is that we also need to be wise as serpents. Scripture instructs us to do that. If we know that Islamic supremacists have a stated goal of undermining our civilization from within, destroying our way of life, putting us all under the Sharia because that is Allah's will, we will lose everything that we are as a civilization, our constitution, our individual liberty, our free enterprise, capitalism that he hates, democracy, which he hates. Why in the world doesn't this concern you? It can be both about the gospel and about the threat, can't it?
Well, that was a tremendous sermon, and I'm not going to have much time to respond to it. But the only way to change someone's heart who believes those things, even accepting, let's accept everything, every connection you make, that every person that speaks at ISNA is automatically with the Muslim Brotherhood. I don't accept any of that, but let's accept it. What do we do about it? Do we keep the walls up?
No.
Keep them in one little small little group?
No. Meet Dr. Cotty.
Actually do what? Am I going to get to answer anything, Janet?
Yeah, I'm just trying to move you along. We got limited time here.
No, you're not moving me along. You're not allowing me to speak.
Well, I am, but please just get to the point because otherwise we're running out of time.
The point is, you just said it's not just about the gospel, and I say it is. Because you said, what about our way of life? Janet, we have Christians living in other nations that don't have our way of life, and they're willing to give their lives so as to bring the gospel to the very same people that are persecuting them.
Would you be willing to fly to Syria and do street evangelism for a month tomorrow?
Where?
Syria.
You can't do that in Syria.
Why not?
You well know it's in civil war.
Well, that's politics, isn't it? So politics does affect us. Right. Politics does affect us.
And what's the answer for Syria?
Stay here and do dialogues, I guess, and not fly over there and preach the gospel. I'm not saying that you should go over there, but I'm trying to make a point about politics mattering because Islam is geopolitical. They are politicians. Yep. They are interested in politics. The Muslim Brotherhood is heavily involved in politics.
And my political haranguing of them is not going to change a thing. All of my beating the American drum is not going to change a thing. They need to know who God is, the true God, the triune God. They need to know what his commandments really are, and they need to know what he's done in Jesus Christ. And we modeled how you can actually engage in that kind of conversation for people all over the world, not just in the backyards of the United States.
I'm going to play a very quick cut because I think this is relevant to what we're talking about. This is what Yasser Qadhi said toward the end of that first night. Listen to cut three.
I don't even know where to begin. The amount of hate crimes that are taking place. I myself have experienced a number of things, security measures. You are made to feel not even a dignified human being. Forget an American. You are stripped of your dignity when people view you as somehow always being a potential threat or somebody who's full of evil or hatred. And ironically, in attempting to fight bigotry and hatred, I feel the people that are doing that are expressing bigotry and hatred. In their fear of Muslims being terrorists, they end up terrorizing Muslims.
Dr. White, he was referring to Christians there, and you did not correct him. He painted us for having any concerns about terrorism at all, which is warranted given all the terrorist attacks around the world. Doesn't mean we're suspicious of each individual. We should still love people and reach out to people. He talked about us as the terrorists, and you didn't say anything. Why not?
Because he wasn't referring to all Christians, obviously. I was sitting right next to him. So
do you think some Christians are terrorists? Are you saying that?
No. Janet, do you really think I said that?
I hope not. I don't know.
Janet, you're not listening. It's amazing. You're not listening to the words that I'm saying. I was sitting right next to him. I knew the context that he was speaking in. He had talked to me about the things he's experienced there in the South, the reality that the only Christians that will talk to him are the Christians that he realizes don't really believe anything. The ones that actually say they believe the Bible will not talk to him. They are fearful of him.
But he said the people who will not talk to him and have any fear of him are terrorizing Muslims. That's what he said.
Yeah, and in fact, I had a Muslim come up to me after the first night, and he said, you know, I am so thankful that you were here this evening, we had this conversation, because I have had people who said they believed in Jesus terrorize my family. They have threatened my children, they've threatened my wife, and now I know they don't really represent everybody, and I'm thankful for that. Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think you just missed my entire point, which you allowed this Islamist to accuse Christians of terrorizing Muslims when the reverse is true. We're going to come back. Isn't that a beautiful sound? That sonogram holds the sound of a baby's heartbeat. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and I'd like to introduce you to the Ministry of Preborn. Preborn's mission is to provide free ultrasounds for young moms in pregnancy centers all around America for free, and they need your help. You can help Preborn save precious lives by sponsoring ultrasounds. Ultrasound is a game changer. By letting a mom hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes to saving babies. You can save a baby's life right here in America by donating to Preborn. Join Janet Mefford today, and let's save 300 babies this summer. Will you help us? 855-601-BABY is the number to call, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Please call 855-601-2229. That's 855-601-BABY. Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not from government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. We are back on Janet Mefford today. Dr. James White joining me. A few more minutes left. Dr. White, I do appreciate your being here so we're able to talk. And I know it's been a little bit tense at times because we're trying to get a lot into a few minutes here in each segment. I want to get to one last thing. One of the things that has been talked about is the fact that you had a number of things that Dr. Cotty said during the course of the debate that were just not true, that went uncorrected. This is part of the problem, I believe, with having dialogue and not a debate. One of the things that he said in the second night was he talked about a video of himself saying some extreme things and, you know, Muslim things about jihad and so forth. And he attributed that video that he said was taken out of context to Robert Spencer, one of the foremost Islamic experts, and Pamela Geller, also one of the Islam experts in the country today. And he attributed to them and then said they sicked his lawyers on him when he tried to deal with the YouTube issue. Robert Spencer came out and said that's not true. We had nothing to do with that video. And then he said, we didn't sick our lawyers on him either. So that's not true. And Dr. White did not correct the record. And he said, I asked Dr. White to correct the record and he won't do it. Would you be willing to publicly correct the record on that and say that Dr. Cotty got it wrong about Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller?
Actually, what he was referring to was a video that is included in an article by Robert Spencer on Jihad Watch, which is what Robert Spencer wrote to me about, by the way, where Robert Spencer did attack Yasser Cotty, saying that he calls Christians filthy. And
he does.
I did. Yeah, that's correct. Do you have a problem with him doing that?
Yeah, of course I do.
Why?
Because it's not an Isaiah 6, Dr. White. I know what your theology is on that. It's not analogous. To say that...
I need to understand. Because Bernie Sanders went after Mr. Voters on the exact same...
I'm not Bernie Sanders, and I know you said that. I'm not Bernie Sanders.
But that's what we're doing here.
That's just rude.
Wait a minute.
It's just rude.
It's rude to
call me Bernie Sanders. Yes, it is.
No, I didn't. I said...
I heard you say it yesterday.
I said, let's not Bernie Sanders this. Let's not do what he did because we can recognize what he did was wrong.
It's not the same.
Am I going to be able to answer this question either?
Yes, we got about 2 minutes left.
Thank you. I would like to give a full response if I can. From the Islamic perspective, a person who engages in shirk is an idolater. Idolatry is the worst sin in God's sight. Therefore, a person who is an idolater is filthy in God's sight, just as we believe that every single individual who is rebelling against God, even his righteous deeds are as filthy rags before God. That is what he was talking about.
No, it's not.
He was saying that we are idolaters.
No, it's not.
And Yes, it is.
It's not analogous because Christians believe that we are all sinners. We are all sinners before God equally. The Muslim, and Robert Spencer has written about this, it's not the same, because Islamic theology that he's talking about is that Christians and Jews are filthy in a way that Muslims are not. It's not analogous.
Okay, we as Christians are no longer filthy in God's sight, right?
Yes, because we're forgiven.
Exactly. And so from the Muslim perspective, you're forgiven of your shirk when you become a Muslim.
That's not
so
the same.
So it is directly analogous. Have you listened to Yasser Qadhi's lectures on
You, Dr. White, since we're almost out of time, will you admit that Dr. Qadhi got it wrong in attributing the creation of that video to Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller, and that he said they sicked his lawyers on him? But Robert told you he didn't sick his lawyers on him. Will you say that Dr. Qadhi got it wrong?
I do not know the facts of that. I do know that the article that contained the video was written by Robert Spencer.
But he said they didn't create that. It was created by a completely different group.
But he used the video in an article.
But that's not what Qadhi said.
Well, I don't know exactly what Yasser Qadhi said. If he was wrong about who produced the video, that's fine. Take that up with Yasser Qadhi. The point was the issue that was brought up is a false attack. It was the exact same type of thing. Look, I want to get to the real issues with Islam, not all this side stuff. That's the problem, is so much of this stuff just produces all smoke, no light. You can't ever get to the in-depth issues that we got to in the dialogue that everyone is ignoring because they're so upset about Muslim Brotherhood or something like that. And
well,
I think getting to the real issues is what destroys the Muslim Brotherhood, because nothing else is going to, other than the power of the gospel.
Well, thank you, Dr. White. I appreciate your taking the time to spend some time here. I appreciate your willingness to take questions. And thank you a lot for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to take a few last minutes only because I want to be able to speak to some of these issues and just make a couple of final thoughts. Dr. White has had quite a bit of time on his own webcast to be able to outline his thoughts for a long, long time. So I'm going to take a few minutes of my own and to be able to outline my concerns. I want to clear something up because I have had a lot of people be really nasty and really accusatory to me on social media. And I think it's been shameful. I think it's shameful because the people who are doing that, it's not right. Let me explain what I'm talking about. I do want to reach Muslims with the gospel. I have no problem. If Dr. White wanted to take Dr. Qadhi and go down to Starbucks and sit across from him and share the gospel with him. In fact, I think that that's great. And I think that's one of the best things that he could possibly do. What I do have an issue with is when you're hauling out a jihadist, an extreme preacher, and he says it's not radical, and he's right in a sense, but he's advocating for jihad and undoing the American way of life and coming after us, physically fighting us when it gets to that point where there's a caliphate set up. The Muslim Brotherhood, you can read all about it. And I want to make a final point, too, on this issue. Ayan Hirsi Ali, not too long ago, had done a testimony before the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs of the U.S. Senate. She talked all about this, and she talked about Dawah, the missions of Muslims in the United States. And she talked about Yasser Qadhi, and she said the case that best illustrates the Dawah mode of operation in the U.S. is that of the Islamic Society of Boston. And among the many preachers and speakers who have appeared at the Islamic Society of Boston in recent years are the notorious anti-Semites Yasser Qadhi, a member of the terror-linked Al-Maghrib Institute. And then she goes on to talk about more. Why does this matter? I'll tell you why it matters. Because Yasser Qadhi, on April 8th, 2014, referred to Ayan Hirsi Ali, who was... She was a Muslim in Somalia. She went through mutilation, which she is fighting now. She has been a brave voice warning the West about the dangers that Islam poses. He called her a well-known, shrill, cacophonous, narcissist Islamophobe. He said he was disgusted by her. He doesn't like her. He's biased against her. Loud, attention-seeking, shallow, and unscholarly. He accused her of all these things. And he said, these days, all you need to get prestigious is to be an ex-Muslim who bashes Islam, which is why he pushed an online petition to Brandeis University, protesting her honorary degree in social justice, appealing to the university to rescind the invitation, which it did. Ayan Hirsi Ali is warning us, having been a Muslim at one time, about what is coming if you don't fight this. Let me tell you why this matters. I care about sharing the gospel with Muslims, but if you're going to stick your head in the sand and not understand the threat, the grave threat to our freedom to proclaim that gospel that the Sharia imposes on all of us, if it ever got to that point, God forbid, then you are just naive. You are absolutely naive and you need to wake up. If you want to continue to be able to proclaim the gospel to people, then we need freedom in order to do that. Yes, you can go overseas and be a stealth missionary, but you can't operate in a free way like you can in the United States, which can be much more effective. You don't have to hide in your living room and have church. You can have a church building and you can proclaim the gospel on the street corner and all the rest. Do you want to lose that? I don't. It is essential to the free proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ that we keep the American system intact and not allow it to be undermined or thwarted by civilization jihad. And when I look across the spectrum and I see everybody acting like this is no big deal and it's only about the gospel, I will say to you, it is about the gospel. It's about preserving our right to preach it and have the most freedom possible to conduct our worship and to have freedom of religion. It's like we don't even appreciate what we've been handed by our forefathers, the great freedoms that God has given to us in this country. And very sarcastically and smirking and saying, oh, well, you know, you just don't care about Muslims. Of course I do. Of course I do. This is why we get behind ministries like Heart for Lebanon, which is bringing the gospel to Christian refugees and Muslims in Lebanon who are in these refugee camps and trying to help them and trying to share Jesus with them before they go back home, because they believe that sharing the gospel with Muslims is a great way to reach the Muslim population in the Middle East. Anybody who makes the accusation against me that I don't care about Muslims hearing the gospel of Jesus Christ doesn't know me. And I will make the same argument for myself that Dr. White is making for himself. I have a history, too. I appreciate his coming on. I appreciate his ability to express himself. I don't agree with him. I think the attitude that he has displayed is dangerous. I really do. And I don't say that to be mean. And this has been a hard show to do because I have had a very good relationship with Dr. White. I hope it can continue. I don't think just because we disagree with one another on this that we have to break fellowship over it. But I feel so strongly about the importance of keeping the gospel and the preaching of the gospel as free as possible. America has been a force for the greatest missionary effort in the history of the world because we're free. We need to stay free, and we need not give any sort of platform or call mentors or kindred spirits of Islamists. That's all the time I have. Thanks for being with us. God bless you, and we'll see you next time.